I don't want to go through all of them, but let's talk about the more important ones. Let's talk about the whooping crane likelihood of occurrence report. Can you briefly describe that for us, please?
Certainly, I'm happy to. The purpose of this assessment was to analyze and evaluate the biological and landscape features to assess the likelihood for whooping cranes to occur in the project area. The project is located on the eastern edge of the whooping crane migration corridor, and while there is suitable habitat for the species present within the project area, the likelihood of the whooping crane using the project area is low, mostly due to the project's location with respect to the migratory corridor.
Okay, and then let's have you briefly discuss the avian point count survey.
The purpose of the fall 2009, spring 2010 avian surveys was to identify potential avian impacts associated with building and operating the project. We conducted point counts throughout the project area using the same locations in the spring and the fall. The conclusions were some as the following. The point count survey suggests a wide number and diversity of bird species utilize the project area. No federally listed threatened and endangered species were observed. The behavioral data suggests that the probability of negative interactions between birds and turbids is generally low for most species. This is due to the fact that species with the highest mean use in the project area often had low encounter rates based on their observed behavior in the project area. Lower encounter rates imply a lower likelihood of turbid collisions. All of the species with higher encounter rates also have stable or growing regional populations.
And that report you just discussed, that has been previously marked and has been filed with the commission as Exhibit 6, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. You offering Exhibit 6?
We'll offer Exhibit 6.
Any objection?
No objection.
6 is admitted.
I'm going to show you what's been previously marked as Exhibit 7. Can you tell me what that is?
Yes, this is the acoustic assessment.
We'd offer Exhibit 7.
Any objection?
7's admitted.
Eric, as you did with the previous exhibit, I'd like you to briefly describe the purpose and methodology and conclusions that were reached in that particular report.
Certainly. The purpose of the acoustic assessment was to identify potential sound sources and estimate site-specific sound levels resulting from the project, and then to determine feasibility of the project to operate in compliance with applicable noise standards and guidelines. Acoustic modeling for the project was completed in accordance with ISO standards. The wind turbine sound source data was used in the analysis were based on the manufacturer's warranty sound power levels per the International Electromechanical Commission. The results of the acoustic modeling were compared to relevant EPA noise guidelines and OSHA regulatory limits, as there are no county, state, or federal noise requirements specific to wind energy facilities within the state of North Dakota. While it has no regulation over environmental noise, the EPA has established sound level guidelines, which suggest sound limits for avoiding the potential for adverse effects on public health and safety. The acoustic modeling analysis, inclusive of a number of conservative assumptions and inclusive of several engineering design safety factors, has shown that the project has been adequately designed to operate in compliance with EPA guideline limits. Likewise, operational sound from the project will not approach OSHA noise exposure limits, even in close proximity to turbine locations. Utilizing a minimum turbine siting setback of 1,400 feet from any residence minimizes the potential noise impact on sensitive receptors such as occupied residences. In conclusion, the sound from the project, when audible, should not be deemed excessive or unusually loud.
Eric, I'm now going to direct your attention to what's been previously marked as Exhibit 8. Can you tell me what that is?
That's the shadow flicker impact analysis.
And we'd offer Exhibit 8.
Any objection?
No objection.
And Erica,
Exhibit 8 is admitted.
Thank you. Erica, could you briefly describe the purpose, methodology, and conclusions reached in that report?
I will. The purpose of the shadow flicker analysis was to determine the potential for shadow flicker impacts to receptors within 1.5 kilometer of any turbine. Shadow flicker impacts, again, are not regulated in applicable state or federal law, and there is no permitting trigger with regard to hours per year of anticipated impacts to a receptor from a wind energy project. However, general precedent has been established in the industry, both abroad and in the U.S., that fewer than 30 hours per year of shadow flicker impacts is acceptable to receptors in terms of nuisance and well below health hazard concerns. Utilizing shadow flicker analysis software and the turbine array provided by CPV, Tetra Tech conducted an analysis of shadow flicker impacts under realistic impact conditions using both the GE and Siemens turbine in our 87 turbine layout. The analysis of potential shadow flicker impacts from the project on nearby receptors shows that shadow flicker impacts within the study area are expected to be minor and well within the acceptable ranges that present no concerns for nuisance or health hazards.
And I believe you indicated that another report that is being prepared and will be filed as a late exhibit is the wetlands delineation report. Is that correct?
Correct.
And, Your Honor, maybe we could have that one marked as Exhibit 11. I think you said 11 and 13.
All right.
As you've done with the previous reports, Erica, what I'd like you to do is once again describe for us the purpose, methodology, and the conclusions that you anticipate will be reached in that particular report.
The purpose of the wetland delineation effort was to field verify and delineate wetlands and waters of the U.S. within our study area and provide characterization of those water resources. We used a combination of desktop and field effort by qualified wetland biologists. We document all wetlands within the study area using appropriate core wetland delineation manual and regional supplement guidance. The conclusions we've reached thus far, based on the field delineation having been completed in July 2010, although the report is still pending, was that there were 82 wetlands delineated within our study area. Based on careful examination of each of these, none appear to have a hydrological connection to traditional navigable waterways. Therefore, it is unlikely that any wetlands located in the study area would be core jurisdictional. Furthermore, this means that the project is unlikely to require permits for permanent impacts to wetlands under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. This layout has avoided wetlands to the extent practicable.
I'm sorry.
I also would like to mention briefly while we're on the topic of wetlands that the Commission may have noticed that there are Fish and Wildlife Service wetland easements within the project area. And CPV intends to avoid wetland impacts within those wetland easements. CPV is awaiting the Fish and Wildlife Service review of the wetlands under their jurisdiction to confirm that they have avoided them.
And another late a report that we're going to want to late file is the Class 3 Archaeological Survey report. And, Your Honor, we'd like to have that marked as late filed Exhibit 12.
Sure.
Okay. And Erica, can you briefly describe for us what you what the purpose of that is, what the methodology will be, and your anticipated conclusions of that report?
I'm happy to. The purpose of the Class 1 and Class 3 surveys was to develop a cultural context of the project area and identify archaeological resources within the Area of Potential Effect, or APE. We developed our methodology using SHPO guidelines and in consultation with TVA and SHPO. We used qualified archaeologists to perform pedestrian survey of our study area, including shovel tests at each of the turbine locations. The Class 1 cultural resource investigation was completed back in early 2010, and the fieldwork for the Class 3 archaeological survey was completed in July. The report is pending. No National Register of Historic Place listed or eligible sites were identified in the project area. No prehistoric or historic artifacts were observed during the pedestrian survey or the shovel tests. However, four new archaeological sites were identified during our Class 3 survey work. These included one historic cemetery, two possible prehistoric stone circles, and one possible prehistoric stone cache. Uplands. In conclusion, it is fair to say that uplands in the project area were not intensively occupied by Native Americans. This is consistent with the results of numerous other Class 3 surveys of potential wind farms in North Dakota, which also resulted in low archaeological site densities. CPV has avoided all four of these sites in the project layout that you see as Exhibit 2. CPV will also develop a site protection plan to be implemented during construction. This may include placing temporary fencing around these four archaeological sites during construction to prevent possible ground disturbance to those sites. And finally, CPV has developed an unanticipated discoveries plan in the event that archaeological resources are unexpectedly uncovered during project construction.
And the final report that you're requesting be filed late is the architectural report. Is that correct?
It is.
And, Your Honor, we'd like to have that listed as late filed Exhibit 13.
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Erica, as you did with the previous reports, would you briefly describe the purpose, methodology, and your anticipated conclusions?
Yes, this architectural report was specifically requested by Tennessee Valley Authority, and the purpose was to identify and document all above-ground cultural resources within the project study area, style dated as greater than 45 years or older, and then to provide SHPA with recommendations on the potential eligibility of these properties to the National Register of Historic Places. Again, we developed our methodology in close consultation with TVA and SHPO, and using SHPO guidelines, we used a qualified architectural historian to survey all standing structures within a half mile of the turbines. The field work was completed in July, and the report is pending. Again, no NRHP listed or eligible properties were identified in our study area. 16 sites were identified in our study area which met the age requirement of greater than 45 years or older, none of these which have been previously recorded by the SHPO. Based on further technical review, which included evaluating the integrity of each of the 16 sites and then looking at the National Register criteria, none of these 16 are recommended to be NRHP eligible. The report will recommend a finding of no historic properties affected.
Now, in addition to these formal reports, have there been any other key analysis that have been done in this area?
Yes, as we submitted in Exhibit 1, we also looked at other considerations such as socioeconomics, land use, soils and geology, as well as rare and unique natural resources.
Okay, let's talk just briefly about the rare and unique natural resources and the analysis that has been done with respect to this.
Yes, we looked at two areas specifically with regard to rare and unique natural resources. The first was federally listed threatened and endangered species, and the other was the bald eagle as it's protected by the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act as well as the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. With regard to federally listed T&E species, there are three species that are listed by the Fish and Wildlife Service as potentially occurring in McIntosh County. These include the whooping crane, the piping plover, and the gray wolf. As noted previously, no T&E species have been detected in the project area. CPV is working in close collaboration with Fish and Wildlife Service and TVA to avoid and minimize impacts. With regard to the bald eagle, as I mentioned, it is federally protected and also listed on the North Dakota Species of Conservation Priority. The bald eagle was detected in very low numbers during both the fall and spring avian surveys in the project area, but not specifically within the project area, but within 1 mile of the boundary. And while observed near the project area, bald eagles are unlikely to be nesting on or near the site due to the lack of suitable trees in proximity to large water bodies.
Now, Mr. Hafner discussed briefly, and there were some questions with respect to the NEPA process. Can you describe that process for us in relationship to the application that's present before the commission today?
Yes. So in addition to this state process where the project is seeking a certificate of site compatibility from the commission, the project is concurrently undergoing an intensive parallel federal review, which is another level of scrutiny that the project is undergoing. And as John mentioned, the trigger for the federal review was TVA's entering into a power purchase agreement as a federal agency, and their action is buying the power. And so their responsibility is to complete the NEPA review of the project and look at environmental impacts before completing the action of buying the power. John also mentioned that this federal nexus also triggers the two consultations through Section 106 under the National Historic Preservation Act and Section 7 under the Endangered Species Act with SHPO and Fish and Wildlife Service respectively. To let you know where we are in the NEPA process, John mentioned that we've kicked this off, or TVA rather, has been working on this since late 2009. They are going to be producing a draft environmental assessment, which should be public in September. Following public review of the environmental assessment, TVA will issue a final environmental assessment. Following successful completion of satisfying both of those consultations I mentioned with Fish and Wildlife Service and SHPO, TVA will then have a determination on the project, and we believe that their finding will be a finding of no significant impact by the end of the year.
John spent some time talking about coordination with other local, state, and federal agencies. I understand that you've also had some consultation with state, local, and federal agencies. Can you spend a few moments describing that for us, please?
Sure. I'd like to just add two additional consultations to the long list that CPV provided of meetings, rather, that we've had and other coordination with local, state, and federal agencies. Specifically, when we were preparing this application for the commission, the project circulated a letter out to an extensive distribution list of local, state, federal agencies, stakeholders, et cetera, seeking input on the project so we could incorporate that feedback into the deliverable to the commission. Those letters went out and back in January 2010, and the results of those consultations were submitted, as you saw, as Appendix A of Exhibit 1. Additionally, around the same time, TVA sent out a written request to a similar extensive distribution list of local, state, and federal entities seeking scoping input for their environmental assessment so they could establish the scope of the environmental document they would be to prepare.
I'm now going to direct your attention to what's been previously marked as Exhibit 9. Can you tell me what that is?
Yes, that is the letter that the United States Fish and Wildlife Service submitted to Tennessee Valley Authority in response to their request for scoping feedback.
Offer Exhibit 9.
Any objection?
No objection.
9 is admitted.
I'm going to direct your attention. Well, pardon me. Of the various agencies that you've mentioned that you've been in, CPV has been in coordination with respect to this project, have you received any objections to the project?
No, we've had no opposition, just good, insightful feedback from the agencies.
Now I want to direct your attention to what's been previously marked as Exhibit 10. Can you tell me what that exhibit is?
Yes, this is the permit and approval checklist.
Offer Exhibit 10.
Any objection to Exhibit 10?
No objection.
10 is admitted.
And can you briefly describe what's contained in Exhibit 10?
Yes, Exhibit 10 shows the remaining permits and approvals aside from, again, the state application and the NEPA process that we've talked about today. As John mentioned during his testimony, there are no local zoning ordinances that apply to the project. However, they do have a road use and maintenance agreement in place with McIntosh County. At the state level, there are a couple additional permits to get closer to construction that typically fall into the responsibility of the engineering, procurement, and construction company. These would include something like haul permits from the North Dakota Department of Transportation, as well as a stormwater permit, a general permit from under the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, which is issued from the state. At the federal level, John has also mentioned the FAA determinations that he's receiving for each of the turbine locations.
Erica, based on your study and review, the exhibits and testimony that you presented here today, your analysis of the regulated resources related to the project and the statutes and rules and regulations that the commission is bound to consider with respect to these types of applications, in your opinion, will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of the state of North Dakota?
Yes.
And are the proposed facilities, in your opinion, compatible with environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources?
Yes.
And will the proposed facility location minimize adverse human and environmental impacts?
Yes.
Your Honor, that's all the questions I have for Ms. Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Mr. Armstrong, do you have any questions of Ms. Roberts, please?
Just a few. Ms. Roberts, you heard me ask Mr. Hafner about the increase in temporary disturbance of acreage during construction. Was that factored into the tests that you've testified about?
Are you referring to test meaning the environmental studies that
yes.
we did?
Yes.
Yes. Each event environmental study had a potentially a different study area. Some of the studies were comprehensive across the entire project area. For instance, the whooping crane and bat likelihood of occurrence analyses. Some of the environmental study areas were more focused on the project layout, but they were greater than the construction footprint that we've identified because we wanted to be extra sure that we studied beyond the limits of the construction footprint.
Okay. And I think you mentioned with the Class 3 study, the late filed exhibit number 12, there were shovel tests done at each turbine site for those. Was the additional increased temporary disturbance considered in that study, do you know?
The area of potential effect as defined with TVA and SHPO was the construction footprint plus an additional buffer. So the construction footprint was incorporated in our Class 3 survey.
Okay, do you know if that additional, I believe it was 109 acres for turbine increase in temporary disturbance, is that uniform throughout the project or will it vary by each turbine location? Do you know, is each turbine location going to be 1.2 additional acres of disturbance?
Correct. At the time that we ran the tables, I believe we applied one number as the buffer or radius around each turbine as the study area.
Okay. And do you...
A uniform number, rather. Sorry.
Do you know why the additional increase in temporary disturbance at each turbine location?
Again, the increase from the original application was to be more conservative, to allow for the fact that, as John mentioned, in some locations roads would be widened, or in the turbine locations, if we studied a slightly larger area, then we had a little more flexibility with the laydown of the potential turbine when you're putting it together.
Okay, and do you know exactly why the additional disturbance per turbine location?
I apologize if I'm not answering it clearly.
Maybe I'm not asking it clearly. As I see it now, each turbine location is going to disturb a little more mm-hmm. acreage per turbine location than was originally in the first application. Do you know why that is the case?
To my knowledge, it was to be more conservative, to assume a larger area was needed for lay down and assembly of the turbines.
Okay, so it still could be less?
Yes.
It's shown to us now as what the maximum would be?
Correct.
And as far as the different turbine components between GE and Siemens, is there any difference between those in your sound analysis or your shadow flicker analysis? Mm.
The difference between the GE and the Siemens turbines in those analyses was negligible. They were quite comparable in both studies. And the specific numbers for each turbine type as far as output for acoustic or output for shadow flicker are available in the exhibits we presented today.
Okay. And when those tests were done, did you consider, you know, with GE there would be 81 turbines and with Siemens there would be 87? Was that taken into account too?
That was taken into account. In fact, we performed the surveys on a more conservative level and assumed that all 87 turbine locations would be used in either the GE or the Siemens, mostly based on, as John pointed out, the seven locations that wouldn't be used for the GE are yet to be defined. And so we did a more conservative study and assumed all of them would be used for each.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Mr. Lee, any questions?
Just one. The sound assessment shows receptors labeled 1, 2, 3, 4. Are those the same receptor numbers that we talked about for residence locations on the map?
They are, and they are also the same as you see in the acoustic report.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Commissioner Clark, please.
Thank you. Just some clarification with regard to the late filed exhibits that we're going to be getting. Are there two separate reports? One is an archaeological report and one is an architectural report. Is that correct?
Correct. They will be separate and distinct reports.
When are we going to be getting those?
We anticipate that you will have them within the next 30 days.
For both of them?
For all three, the wetlands delineation included.
Okay. And again, the archaeological report, that will include, is the class one has been done already, is that correct? And
correct.
That was the basis for the application, so it was testified to there. What's the outstanding piece? Is it the pedestrian survey that, or has that had, it's all been done, it just hasn't been typed up?
All the field work has been completed and the report is in progress. It needs to go through a few peer reviews and internal reviews and then will be published. It will be provided both to the commission as well as to TVA, as it is their responsibility to take ownership of the document and submit to SHPO for their review.
Is it being done by Tetra Tech or is it being done by a private CRM firm? That's
Tetra Tech.
Okay. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
I just have one or two, or it's kind of a discussion I wanted to have with you. Well, every time I think one of these things can be routine, something new comes up. And this one is somewhat unique for us, perhaps somewhat because it's a different company than we've dealt with, although we're very familiar with, of course, with Tetra Tech. But this issue of prime farmland as an avoidance area has been more interesting recently as we've started aggregating all of these numbers. Now, everybody always claims, regardless of if it's dozens or hundreds of acres, that it's negligible. In this case, we can honestly say it's negligible because there aren't any. But what's unique about this is that you testified that 50% of the footprint is native prairie and another 10% is tamed grasslands. We list prime farmland as an exclusion area and don't have evidently the same protections for native prairie, and I know we're going to hear more about it, but in your experience beyond just North Dakota, how does native prairie and prime farmland, how do those two sort of stack up, if you will, in terms of their avoidance, exclusion status in other places? Because it's, I think it's an interesting policy, perhaps, discussion beyond even this hearing.
Yeah. In my professional opinion, in the experience I've had across the country, I do see prime farmland as often more regulated than native grassland or native prairie. In multiple states, I've seen protection of soils and agricultural as a, maybe it's a historical thing that's come, you know, that where that came about. But yeah, I think universally I've seen agricultural land as highly protected and native grassland and prairie not to date.
I would agree. I think it is as much tradition or culture and history as anything. At the same time, we have less cropland every year and bigger yields and more crops, and we're looking at another probably record this year unless a hailstorm comes through, and we hope that doesn't happen. And yet we are seeing, I think, an interesting tension between preserving the history of prime farmland, or perhaps the productivity of prime farmland in today's culture, and the increasing preciousness, if you will, of our native prairies. So it's probably not as relevant to your testimony as it is just to my curiosity, but I thank you for answering it so well. I have nothing further.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you for your testimony here. Okay, so you do an environmental baseline study, right? You've already completed that?
Yes, a lot of our studies are what I would consider setting the environmental baseline of what's in the project area as opposed to then comparing it to the project impacts.
Okay, so at what point in time or how does it work where, just walk me through, so the construction's going on, who goes out there and makes sure that they're not doing something wrong to what the plan was, and after the project is built, let's say, do we go back year one and what we thought would happen is happening in year three, or just after it's done, we just say, take a snapshot, and then we don't come back and look at the impacts to the system.
All right, thank you for your question. Environmental compliance is an important component post receiving your permits, and typically what is involved is that the developer would team, again, with an environmental consultant to establish an environmental compliance plan so that, depending on the permits that they have, they can follow up with the necessary sign-offs. For example, during the stormwater construction permit, they're going to need to be sign-offed after rain events, saying that okay. During construction, the hay bales and whatnot are still supporting and protecting from erosion. We are also working with Fish and Wildlife and TVA under Section 7 to make sure that there's some biological monitoring going on during operation. And the details of that plan and who will be doing the studies are remain to be listed in the final details of the plans themselves. Rather, we have a biological assessment underway, an avian batten protection plan, and those will all support compliance in the long term with the original requirements of the permits and approvals.
So the in general, and the people that issue you the permit, that's who you report back to over some period of time. And I don't know that we require any of that kind of stuff, but it's just, I guess, just verification that somebody's following through with what you say now is true, turns out to be true down the road.
Yes, it's very important.
Okay. And then who signs off on the record of decision on this case? Who's the signing agent?
For under NEPA, the record decision would be from TVA. However, I typically use record of decision as the end result if we went through an EIS instead of an EA. The EA decision would be either a FONSI or to kick it up to an EIS.
But isn't there like some person that signs, like the secretary of some agency that signs these things, or that agrees that this, somebody inside the federal government, if you will, signs off that what you've submitted is true and accurate? I'm just curious who that authority is in this case with TVA.
I don't have a name for you, but I'm happy to look that up for you afterwards and, okay. And consult with TVA on that
sure.
Response.
That's not a late filed exhibit, more just
no.
Curiosity than anything.
No.
Okay, here. I liked your term that I'd like to use in the future, if that's okay. When you say you didn't have any opposition, just insightful feedback as a politician, I might use that term myself at some point in time. People, right? That's excellent. That was beautiful. Because somebody, I mean, that was good. Let me ask this question too: is the how would I if one of my I grew up completely opposite part of the state than here. I grew up in the farther northern part, but you know, if somebody says, show me the impact to wildlife or to waterfowl, I can point them to a study. If I wanted to be impact to deer hunting or deer population, is that in here somewhere? Because we didn't talk about that. Like deer populations, did they get overlooked in this, or is that in some other study?
These reports that we've talked about in the testimony and in the application are primarily focused on wildlife as opposed to gaming species. The report does have some mention of recreational uses for hunting and use of the project site, though a specific deer population study was not conducted.
Is that because it probably was not asked for any of the permits, or is it just we haven't developed the data collection that much?
I'm sure there are available methodologies to do such a study, though I haven't done one for a wind project to date. I think primarily the reason it wasn't conducted again is it wasn't a requirement or a prudent study that we recommended as an environmental consultant to the developer based on these specific site conditions.
So the Fish and Wildlife Service, they would have jurisdiction over that kind of population though too, wouldn't they? This is just asking just a general discussion.
Yes, their purview does extend beyond threatened endangered species to gaming species as well.
Okay. I think that was it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. Mr. Bender, any further questions?
No redirect.
No redirect? All right. Any further questions of this witness?
Mr. Armstrong? I did have one further question. Commissioner Clark asked about the recent letter filed, I think, by Fish and Wildlife Service, and I guess that's different than your Exhibit 9, is it not?
Yes, the letter that Commissioner Clark referenced was a recent letter, I believe he said last Friday, to him directly. The letter that is Exhibit 9 was in direct response to the scoping request from Tennessee Valley Authority and was a number of months back.
Okay, and I apologize, but I don't have a copy of the letter that was recently filed. I think since we're here, I'd ask for your comments on it from the questions on that letter.
I actually do not have a copy of the letter that was provided to the commissioners either, but I have a review of it, I would have given you a copy.
You haven't read the letter?
I have not.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Kind of following what Kevin's discussion was, that the native prairie question, if that comes back and you have to mitigate some of that, where do you even begin to go to do something like that? Because there, I mean, how does that work? I know this is hypothetical, but but I think there's some merit to the discussion of how do you mitigate offsets in one area and somewhere else? Mm-hmm. How do you even begin to approach that?
Yeah, I can give you my project manager overview response as opposed to a very technical response. But with regard to native prairie, my understanding it is very difficult to recreate. It very costly and time consuming. There are certain steps you can do to help regenerate with native species after you disturb it, but it's not the same as restoration. As far as mitigation, I think the options would be more likely that you preserve other locations of native prairie rather than recreating it.
So, yeah, I guess we'll just see how that all plays out. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Call. Any further questions of Ms. Roberts?
None here.
No further questions. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Mr. Bender, do you have any other evidence to present to the commission at this time?
I have nothing further.
All right. So the applicant has presented two witnesses and 10 exhibits, and there'll be three late filed exhibits, which we haven't admitted yet, but are likely to be admitted. We recognize what those three are. The wetlands and waterways delineation, the archaeological survey, and the architectural report. Correct?
Yes.
11, 12, and 13. All right, perhaps we should take a short recess at this time. The attendance sheet is passed around, I believe. Is that someplace out there? Oh, it's right there. Thank you. All right. Looks like we have three, possibly four witnesses that would like to present testimony to the commission. We're going to take a strict 10-minute recess at this time. It's 5 minutes to 1, and we'll come back at 1:05 and take public testimony. So we stand recess till 1:05.